This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, a great show today. We've got Andre Pavlov, Professor of Finance and Real Estate at SFU Beatty School of Business. I'm super excited to have Andre back on the show.
You know what? It's been a while since Andre has been on the show, and I think this is a prime opportunity to talk to him. First of all, you buried the lead.
Jumbo interest rate hike
this morning. I think widely expected. So the market potentially has already factored that in.
Surging inflation.
We talked about both of these things with Andre and where we're going from here and what it means not only for the global economy, the Canadian economy, the local economy, but of course, Vancouver real estate. And it's funny, he starts off very optimistic, but
the show meanders.
The show meanders.
Exactly. And this is a great conversation. And I honestly, I think I've said this on the show before, but Andre is one of my favorite guests to have on the program, partly because every time he's on the show, he's a super thoughtful guy, but also everything he says, he's got his thinking on the market kind of distilled in this way where it just seems like, of course, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the time people try and make things complicated when they don't necessarily have to be.
Right. And the other thing, and I feel like there's a bunch of guests that we have on all the time, but, you know, from global economy, war in Ukraine, down to, you know, grain prices on the prairies, to whatever, the local market in Dunbar, like Andre can speak about anything.
Sure. And I know like, yeah, grain prices on the prairies, you know, we've been, barley's up on account of your post.
It's been a stressful week.
Well, we should talk about that because you've been in multiple still.
You know, I think these are Vancouver specific.
City of Vancouver,
a variety of price points, at least 5-6 offers on things this week.
Sure.
You were in a multiple offers last week with 11 offers.
11 offers. We were successful.
So two things seem to be happening here. One is, we've always said since the start of COVID, it's like, well, you know, what does this pullback look like in relation to the city of Vancouver when so many people went so far afield?
Right.
And how does this kind of look when the tide comes in? And it does seem like the city of Vancouver is still quite busy. But secondly, rate holds is the thing that I think a lot of people are dealing with where, you know, if they don't get something, if they don't get into the market before their rate hold expires, their carrying costs go up significantly.
Right.
And a lot of people are kind of anxious to get in.
We're launching, I think we have 3 new listings coming just after Easter long weekend, which is this weekend. And generally speaking, a lot of people I'm talking to are bringing product to market. So it'll kind of be interesting because this announcement, it just came out today. I think you're right. I think there's going to be this, you know, usually when there's an interest rate increase, there's a lot of these rate holds that are in place. Well, there'll be people looking at their payment. And Vancouver, like, let's face it, we are very much a payment-focused market, right?
It's a carrying cost market.
It's a carrying cost market, right? People break down what they have to pay each month and they see if that makes sense. And usually the purchase price is kind of secondary in a lot of ways. So this will be interesting to see when people look at what the new rate that they're going to be taking on versus the rate that they currently have in place. What kind of decisions are people going to make to get in last minute here?
Definitely an interesting moment in the market, Adam. But as of right now, without any crystal balls in place, busy in the city of Vancouver. That's for sure. Like I lost out on something last night with 5 offers. I went and saw something yesterday that was looking at offers as they come.
Yep.
And then they decided
modify
because there's such high interest. And that's happened. A number of listings I've looked at in the last couple of days here this week, that's happened. So interesting moment in the market for sure, but maybe we should talk to Andre about this because obviously his take is always super interesting.
This is a fascinating conversation with Professor Andrei Pavlov. I love this episode, and I think you will too. Enjoy.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums, over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, so we're here with Andrei Pavlov, the professor of finance and real estate at SFU Beattie School of Business. How you doing, Andrei?
I'm doing great.
Past guest fan favorite. Andrei, you were even on a Vancouver Real Estate Live, the pre-COVID show.
I miss those.
I know. I miss those too. I feel like those should come back. But you were a guest on Vancouver Real Estate Live. You've been on the show a bunch. So welcome back. And thanks so much for your time.
I'm also just going to say one of the most, so many people reach out after your episodes. And I think we get a lot of former students of yours that listen to the show.
Yeah, well, finally they're listening to me. Because surely no one listens to me during my classes, you know. No, it's great to hear that, and of course great to be on the show again and talk to you. And yes, absolutely, we should start doing that in person as soon as possible. But here we are today and very much looking forward to a nice discussion.
Andrei, for the listeners that don't know you, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I'm a professor of finance at the Beattie School of Business, and my primary research interest is in real estate. And of course, being in Vancouver, that kind of fits nicely with really pretty much the most important topic in the city and in the province, really. So this has allowed me to kind of really think through what issues we are facing in the housing market and what's the kind of appropriate way to, I don't want to say fix them, but at least make progress in the right direction.
I don't know if this is a good launching point or not, but it's a broad one. How's the global economy doing right now?
Well, I think it's doing pretty well. It's clearly, most places around the world are recovering from the pandemic, even though we do hear about lockdowns, new lockdowns in China. But other than that, you know, the economy was recovering pretty much everywhere. And all the fiscal and monetary stimulus, meaning low interest rates and government spending, that was put in place during the pandemic as a response to the pandemic, is now making its way through the economy. And this generates really very substantial demand for pretty much everything. The issues the global economy faces is really on the supply side. So supply management and operations management used to be a pretty boring field. Like no one really was excited about that. And now it has become the most important field in business because it is so difficult to make anything or to get anything done quickly and efficiently and so on and so forth. So, that's the struggle. We are struggling to produce much of anything. There is shortages and high prices for many items. And as a result, we are, of course, facing very, very high inflation, both here at home and really many other places around the world.
So just thinking about supply chain issues and inflation. How long do you think that takes to kind of get back to pre-pandemic levels? Is it an interest rate kind of problem as a central bank would kind of approach it, you know, monitoring that? Or is it a supply chain issue and kind of getting the efficiencies back in the system? And maybe yeah. that dichotomy is not a smart one to make, but I'll let you speak to it.
Yeah, well, I mean, inflation is pretty easily defined. It is basically the increase in prices of a basket of goods. And so the definition, at least in theory, is very clear. Of course, in practice, everything gets a little harder. But at the end of the day, I think we agree on what inflation means. However, it's not that we can't agree, but there are many causes for price increases. And the typical cause historically has been just the economy is overheating. People are making money and spending money. And as a result, there's too much demand for goods. And then businesses are producing more goods, which generates even further demand for labor. So wages go up. And it's a cycle which is, you know, pretty healthy cycle, other than if it gets out of control, then prices start to rise too much. And that's where the government can, the central banks can come in and increase interest rates to slow that cycle down a little bit, so that not to kill the economy, we still want the economy to be growing, but not at a huge rate that generates high price increases. So that's kind of our traditional understanding of inflation. The problem today is inflation is driven by other factors. So when it's obviously commodity prices are going up, they were going up quite fast before the war in Ukraine. And of course, now with the war, they have gone up even higher. And then the other reason for the inflation we have today is that it is just hard to produce much of anything. So the traditional supply chains are struggling, whether that's shipping or just the manufacturing part, but it is just difficult and time-consuming to produce anything. And when you're in that situation, the concern is interest rates increases do not help. So if interest rate increase, that may slow down the local economy, but that has no impact on commodity prices. That's, the price of oil or wheat or metals isn't going to change because Canada raises interest rates. So then raising interest rates in this particular situation is kind of tricky. It needs to be done to some extent to slow down local demand, but at the same time, it has limited power and limited effectiveness because at least some of the current inflation is caused by rising commodity prices and just the difficulty of producing much of anything.
So what is the day today? We're at April 12th. Just to timestamp this, tomorrow, it sounds like at least I would say at least 75% of people out there are believe that the Bank of Canada is going to raise interest rates 50 basis points. Is that aggressive in your mind, or is that kind of the right move at this point?
Well, I mean, when we have inflation of 4-5% and then 7% in the US, you know, 0.5% increase from very, very low levels. And of course, we already had a 25 basis point increase. So together, that will be 75 basis point increase. This is substantial, but relative to 4-5% inflation, and really, in my view, the real inflation is actually higher than that. When you have such high inflation, 75 basis point increase from basically zero is, you know, it's not that much. It doesn't sound like a big number, and it's not a big number. The reason Bank of Canada is cautious, and I think they, you know, they will keep increasing rates, but not we're not going to see 2% or 3% or anything like that. The reason we're not going to see that is, as I mentioned already, much of the inflation today is caused by high commodity prices and just inability to produce many items. So then when you're in that situation, you don't want to raise interest rates too much because that's not going to help control prices, but that's going to cause real pain for local businesses and consumers. And so normally when you have inflation, you know, people are okay because there's a lot of jobs and the economy is growing and everyone is making money. But when the inflation is due to commodity prices or just inability to produce anything or to get inventory, then no one's really able to make very much money, but prices still rise. So if on top of that you add interest rate increases and higher loan payments, mortgage payments, all of that, that just increases the pain for everyone, but doesn't really help control inflation. So I think we're going to see the 50 basis points and probably a little more after that, but it's still going to be limited because the effectiveness of interest rate increases in this environment is limited.
So Andre, what in your mind, how do we get out of this? It sounds like at least, and I, from our past conversations, I know government intervention is probably not the way you're perceiving this, but are there tools in the toolbox here for dealing with kind of massive supply, global supply chain issues and global uncertainty and I guess war in Ukraine that is leading to these high commodity prices? What else can we do? Is it just a holding pattern at this point, waiting for things to kind of work their way through the system and get back to kind of pre-COVID levels?
I don't think so at all. I think this actually presents a real opportunity for Canada to bring production back home and really start making things right here at home in BC and in Vancouver and certainly elsewhere in Canada. So bring production back home with all the jobs and opportunities that provides. And what we need to do to make that happen is the government needs to get out of the way. We need to reduce regulation and red tape, and not a little bit on the margin. We need to go through every single form and every single regulation out there and assess whether it's absolutely truly essential or not, and with the aim of cutting half or more. So we need to make it much, much easier to start and run a business in Canada and especially in BC. And then we also need to simplify and lower our taxes. So some tax rates, business tax rates for small businesses sound low. For large businesses, they are higher. We need to simplify all of that and really substantially lower taxes so that we can bring back manufacturing. Now, there are some sectors like textiles that require a lot of labor. We're not going to be able to compete in those sectors because obviously there's cheaper labor elsewhere, and then that manufacturing will always go there. But there are a whole bunch of sectors, and more so nowadays than in the past, that require very little labor and especially very little unskilled labor. So there is no reason why Canada could not have that kind of manufacturing. So take pharmaceuticals, for example. There's no reason why we were not producing any vaccines. Vaccines do not require a lot of labor. So the only reason we had no vaccine production at all was we have made it so difficult to run a business in Canada that anyone who can produce whatever they're producing elsewhere will choose to go elsewhere. So reverse that, reduce regulation, red tape, lower taxes, and simplify them so that it is easier for all businesses to actually produce things at home. So this will not only help with the supply issues, but will also help generate jobs and incomes for the broad population. And then even if we have inflation because of commodity prices or global forces, that's okay because our local incomes are going to grow at least at that rate or hopefully faster.
Very interesting. So in many ways, Canada could be a beneficiary of the global uncertainty and if the country makes the right decisions. Are there certain provinces that you think could really stand to benefit? And I'm thinking specifically of maybe oil in Alberta or grain potentially in the prairies.
Sure. Absolutely. Those stand out and Canada can, you know, having the second or third largest oil reserves and then obviously huge amount of land, we can really step in and replace other producers with, without the political uncertainty that other countries have. So it's a real opportunity. And also, there is a ton of opportunity right here in BC. You don't have to be in the resource industry to see that we have a lot going for us. We have educated workforce, we have relative stability, safety, reasonable infrastructure, not great, but reasonable. And we have some institutions that are not working perfectly, but, they're still sort of better than many other countries. So you put all of this together, there is a lot of production that can happen right here at home. And by production, I don't mean just, making furniture and you know, cars, but also the high-tech sector, the pharmaceutical sector, fantastic industries that really don't require very many resources, but add a huge value to the economy.
So I guess, Andre, we've been speaking pretty broadly so far, maybe bringing it back to real estate. What in your mind does this all mean for Vancouver real estate?
Well, obviously, real estate is hugely impacted by inflation and interest rates. So the way things are at the moment, inflation is 4 or 5%. Interest rates on typical mortgage rates are, 3%. You know, I've seen them go up to about 4 now very recently, but still below the rate of inflation. So that means if you have an asset and a real estate asset and you hold on to it, you're able to hold on to it for a while, everyone expects that asset to appreciate at least at the rate of inflation. It is really quite rare that real estate appreciates at a rate lower than inflation over a 5 or 10 year period. Certainly not over a 10 year period. I don't think that has ever happened. So the point is, when you have high inflation, your asset value goes up by more than your mortgage payment. And so in a sense, the appreciation of your asset pays your mortgage. So you're living in your home or you're using your home for free. So that sounds really good, at least in theory. The issue is you have to hold on to your asset. So if you're ever put in a situation where you can't make your mortgage payments in the medium term or in the short term, if you just have liquidity issue, then you lose your asset and then inflation is of no help at all. So as long as you're able to maintain your mortgage and keep your property, inflation helps you and you're doing great. If you can't, that's where you run into trouble. But that can't part becomes more significant when interest rates are going up. And the reason that happens is that, if you have a mortgage that is, say, 10 times your income, 1% increase in mortgage rates means you have to have an increase in your income of 10%. Right? So for each 1%, you need to have 10% increase in your income if you're highly levered. If you're less levered, say 4 times, your mortgage is 4 times your income, then your income needs to go up by 4% for every 1% increase in inflation. So regardless of your leverage, obviously if you're highly levered, you're particularly exposed, your income needs to go up multiple times the rate of inflation in order for you to maintain your, to be able to service your loan. And sure, incomes are growing, but they're generally growing at the rate of inflation. They're not going 2, 3, 4 times or 10 times the rate of inflation. So that's where people can get into trouble. If you're highly levered, meaning your mortgage is many times your income, like 5, 7, 10 times, which unfortunately is not unusual in Vancouver, then your priority is to be able to service your loan even at the new higher interest rates. And then you'll be fine. 5 to 10 years from now, everything will be good. And in fact, you're going to be way ahead because your asset would have appreciated by a lot more than the mortgage payments you're making. But if you can't service your asset and you're forced to sell or even worse, default, then the inflation doesn't benefit you at all. You don't care that your asset value eventually goes up because you no longer own the asset. So that's the crux of the problem. And Vancouver, as I said, is exposed because we're so over-levered. Our mortgages are, 5, 7, 10 times our income. So even the 75 basis point total interest rate increase we're seeing now, and we'll hopefully see tomorrow 50 and plus the 25 before, even that is going to affect people. And then I'm just hoping everyone can still kind of hold on at least for a few years and then everything will be good.
So that's actually potentially a more dire situation than I was expecting you to kind of outline here. In terms of leverage in Vancouver, you're thinking this over the next, say, 6 to 18 months is potentially a particularly difficult period.
Yes, it is a difficult period if you're over-levered. And of course, that's going to affect buyers as well because, you know, I mean, it's really pretty simple math. If your mortgage is 10 times your income and the mortgage rate goes up by 1%, one percentage point, you need a 10 percentage point increase in your income to be indifferent, right? And no one's getting 10% increase in their income, even in this high inflationary environment. So then what happens is, in the long run, you're fine because your asset price appreciates. But in the short run, you still have to make those mortgage payments. If you can't make the mortgage payment, the bank is going to be calling you and trying to collect. And the fact that you can say, oh, you know what, I'll pay you and more in 10 years, that's not going to matter, right? So that's the issue. Now, 75 basis points is not quite as bad, right? We can probably handle that because people hopefully have some cushion and they can cut on other consumption in order to maintain their mortgage. But if we see, you know, 1.5% mortgage rate increase, that's then even with this high inflation, income growth is not going to be sufficient to make people indifferent, right? To make people equally well off. So then we're in the risk of people not being able to buy, but more importantly, people who currently own, it's not clear how they're going to be able to make those payments.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakwin Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakwin, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakwin.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
So Andre, I'm just thinking about right now where definitely pockets of the lower mainland right now are softening. We're seeing some softening in other kind of tertiary markets throughout BC. It sounds like what you're saying then is that with inflation, real estate prices will continue to go up. But you're also saying that there's going to be some people that are potentially running into challenges making their payments and forced to sell if they can't hang on. What do you think is going to happen with prices in the short to midterm here?
Yeah, so I'm being a typical economist. I realize that on one hand. On the other hand, making it completely useless. But
just tell me what to do, Andre.
Yes, if I knew what to do. But more seriously, on the other hand, it's really quite applicable here because on one hand, you want to own assets and you want to have leverage, you want to have debt because the debt payments are fixed. And when inflation is high, those debt payments become easier and easier to make, right? Because you're paying back with inflated dollars. So you want to have that. And you certainly want to have assets because those assets are going to be going up, at least at the rate of inflation. So you do want to do that. And that's relatively little risk or almost no risk over the number of years. So if your horizon is 5 to 10 years, no problem. It's difficult to see how you can mess that up. Where we run into trouble, the other hand now comes in, which is in the short run. You've got to make sure you are able to make those mortgage payments in the short run. And if you can do that somehow by, you know, finagling your mortgage situation and being able to borrow more to make some of the payments, deferring some other consumption, deferring some renovations, if you can do any of that, it's great. Then you're clear. Then you can get past that, you know, 5 to 10 year horizon, and you're going to be in a very, very strong situation. So the priority is, I guess the lesson here is you buy as much real estate as you can and you borrow as much as you can, but just make sure that you can make your payments for the next 2 or 3 years. And if you can do that, I think you're going to be in a very strong situation. If you lose your asset in the next 2 to 3 years, then obviously that would be a big mistake. And inflation isn't going to help you then. So borrow as much as you can, buy the biggest property or as many properties as you can, but make sure you can service that loan in the short run. So the primary risk management here should be on the first 2 to 3 years.
Great advice. Andre, just a few questions here. Where are we at for, so I'm thinking, you know, we're talking about fixed rates at like 4% right now. In the next 2 to 3 years, it sounds like this is, in your mind, the rough patch when it comes to interest rates. I feel like we talked, and this was, I think, Tom Davidoff years ago, you know, the new normal is a low interest rate environment was kind of for the, you know, for indefinitely. What is the new normal, say, 3 years from now for interest rates? Like, do we kind of go through a period of rising interest rates here and kind of plateau, or does it lead to a recession and interest rates drop again? What are your thoughts on kind of the new normal for where we get with interest rates?
Well, as long as the central governments, Bank of Canada and other central banks don't overdo it with interest rates, then I think we're okay, because the fundamentals in the economy are pretty strong, other than the supply issues. So I'm hoping we get through that somehow. But otherwise, there is demand. People want to buy stuff. And whatever we can produce, we can actually sell quite well. So the fundamentals are pretty strong. And the economy can take on, you know, maybe total of 1.5% increase. If we do go higher than that, then we run the risk of running into another recession, which of course would mean interest rates are going to go back to zero immediately. So hopefully, it's very difficult. So it's easy for me to say, hopefully, the central banks are going to get it right and not raise rates too high to kill the economy. But that is a very difficult problem. It's very tricky to find the right balance between doing what you can to control inflation and at the same time not killing the economy. So finding that path is very, very difficult. And chances are we're going to make a mistake on it just because it is so difficult to find the exact right balance. So probably we're going to overreact a little, but hopefully that will be detected quickly. And the moment there's any sign of weakness in the economy, we're going to act very fast to lower interest rates again. So unfortunately, the new normal here is high volatility in interest rates. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the 50 basis points tomorrow and one or two more increases after that. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we see a drop in interest rates, you know, maybe 12 to 18 months from now. So high volatility in interest rates. And that's difficult for people and for businesses because it makes it harder to plan. So that volatility is not great. But I don't see another way around it. I you know, obviously, if we figure out a way to do it 100% right, I assume we won't. But that's a very difficult problem. So we're going to make mistakes. And then we're going to try to correct them, and doing so introduces volatility in interest rates.
Andre, it's just striking me that you sound fairly optimistic about the global economy right now. And
why am I crying?
And I don't know why Matt's curled up in the fetal position right now, but I feel like there's a lot of chatter out there right now. Like there seems to be a lot of like a pessimistic mood about the future of the economy.
Well, but even this conversation, right? We started off with the global economy being, we're doing really well. And,
yeah.
But the tenor is feels pessimistic.
You know, I think also like there's been a few articles just recently in, you know, the Financial Post yesterday and other publications talking about people projecting a recession in 2023 and albeit a short recession. Do you think there's credibility in those projections, or what are your thoughts on it?
Well, I'm optimistic about the economy because there is demand out there, and I think for most business people the most important thing is to be able to sell your product, and businesses are able to do that now. I mean, you go to any store and you can see most things are just flying off the shelf, right? So on the demand side, the economy is doing very well. The issues are on the supply side that we can't produce what we need to produce and get it to market. But people are smart. I'm optimistic that people are going to figure that part out. And in fact, we see some of that already happening. The shortage in vehicles, for example, it seems to be alleviated now. There's less of a shortage for most vehicles. Well, you know, a few months ago, there were long wait times. Like the simple van was like 6 to 9 month wait. So the reason I'm optimistic is I think it's easier for businesses to figure out how to get products to market. It takes time, and the environment is very challenging right now, more so than in the past. But generally, that's something businesses can do. What I'm worried about is a situation where there's no demand, there's product, but no one wants to buy it. That's the kind of thing that is much more difficult to fix. So that's the source of my optimism. As far as the recession predictions are concerned, that's correct, and there is a reason for that. But that's because people are afraid central banks are going to overreact, they're going to raise interest rates too fast, and then they're going to kill that strong, robust demand that we have now. So that's what I was saying. If we get this right, we're not going to, I don't anticipate a recession, but it's difficult to get it right. And if we do overreact, then very well, we might get a recession. But hopefully, if that happens, we're going to act fast enough to lower interest rates again and hopefully get demand back up.
Andre, it sounds like just going back to kind of advice in this type of environment, which, as I understood it, was kind of use leverage to your advantage in a high inflationary environment, but just make sure you can make the payments. Two questions for you, I guess. One, and this is thinking specifically about people looking to get into the market as investors, would you be buying right now? And what happens to rents in this environment?
Well, let me take the second one first, because it's an easy thing. Nothing happens to rents in Vancouver.
I was going to say, if we could under... thinking it's so regulated, right?
Yeah, we're so undersupplied. I mean, meaning there's such a shortage of housing in Vancouver that it really will take like Armageddon to get rental rates lower in Vancouver. It's just not going to happen. What we need is really to vastly increase our rental supply. Not 5,000-10,000 units. We need 100,000 units, maybe more, maybe 500,000 units. And then we might see some sort of rental rate softening. Until that happens, and it's not going to happen in the current political environment, we're so short on housing, it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. So rental rates, I think there's very little chance or no chance at all they'll go down. And then remind me the first question, the difficult one.
Well, I
forgot that one.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking, what about in terms of in a high inflationary environment, I was actually thinking of it too in terms of rents actually going up. Like, do you see a relationship between, you know, goods and services costing more and where rents fall? And when I say fall, I mean not actually fall, but where
right.
they're, not to confuse things.
Yeah, I get it. That's a good point. Normally rents go up at least at the rate of inflation. As I said, what drives market rents in Vancouver is this housing shortage. So if we let rents fluctuate freely in the market, you know, they'll go up 10%, maybe even 20%. So yeah, inflation adds to that pressure, but really what's determining rents is the regulation, not the market forces. It's a highly controlled market. And, you know, by the way, that's the primary cause for the supply shortages that we do have. But that's a separate topic.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe rents on new units are going to go up faster than inflation, so faster than usual because of the high inflation. But we also have to think about the fact that people are now going to be paying higher mortgage rates or higher loan rates on any debt they have. And renters, even though they don't have a mortgage, they still probably have other debt. And so that's one factor. And the fact that the price of all other goods like food and energy are going up so much, That means actually people who rent have less to spend on rents. So the market forces are not really all that conducive to large rent increases. But as we said, none of that matters in Vancouver because this is not a free market where rents are determined by demand and supply. They're determined largely by the government. And because of that, we have huge shortage of rental properties, and then rents just go up as fast as they can anyway. So at the end of the day, inflation makes very little difference for that particular segment.
And the first question was, would you buy right now?
Yeah, so the question there is, presumably you have some sort of locked-in interest rate from 2 or 3 months ago that is expiring shortly. And the question is, do you buy now using that, you know, pre-approval rate and that's locked in and that's lower? Or do you wait a little bit, say 6 months or a year, and hoping that prices go down? But then you're going to be paying higher interest rate. So it's a tricky decision. I don't know, because there's no guarantee that price will actually fall. If inflation remains high or increases even higher, prices may actually not fall. Even though interest rates are going up, inflation induces more people into the market because it makes buying an asset much more attractive, as we already discussed. So there's no guarantee that price will actually fall. So at the end of the day, my thought would be, if you find a property that you like and you think you can stay in it for 5 to 10 years, great. And, you know, buy it and lock in your rate, your interest rate, and know that prices might fall in the next 6 to 12 months, but they might not. And that really shouldn't matter to you because your eye is focused on what happens 5 to 10 years from now. But don't just jump in and buy something because your rate is just expiring. It has to be something that you like, a property that you like, and presume you're going to live in it for a number of years and be happy there. So if you can find that, great. If you can't, maybe wait, and there is a reasonable chance prices might soften a little. And even if prices don't go down, at least there will be more product choice on the market.
You know, just thinking about the way the kind of sub-areas or sub-markets in the Lower Mainland, how real estate has played out since the start of COVID, you know, it seems like we've seen really high appreciation in the Langleys, Abbotsfords, Maple Ridge, and we've talked, you know, at length about the kind of COVID impact on Vancouver real estate. I'm just wondering in this, and I don't know if you have kind of a feel for the sub-markets, Andre, but which areas do you think are going to be hurt worst by these rising interest rates and this, what could potentially be a market slowdown?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question because it's not so much about an area, but more about the neighborhoods in which people are overextended. So the neighborhoods in which, especially recent buyers, have stretched themselves are going to be affected the most because potentially those are the buyers, those are the recent homeowners that can run into trouble if interest rate increase substantially. Now, that data is difficult to get because we know a lot about the property and we know even who the owner is and all that, but we don't know generally what type of mortgage they have. So it's difficult to determine that. But if there's any anecdotal evidence out there on areas where people really overextended, that would be a red flag. Otherwise, during the pandemic, it has become really quite clear that people like to have space and backyard, and really single-family homes are by far the preferred choice. And the reason Abbotsford and Langley and all that are doing well is they still have some affordable, I don't want to say affordable, but more reasonably priced single-family homes. It is very, very difficult to find a reasonable single-family home in Vancouver or you know, closer to Vancouver. So in terms of the markets that are going to do well, yeah, sure, there's going to be some migration back to the downtown and high-density areas. But I think people have discovered that they really value, the single-family home setup quite a bit. And given that Sure, the pandemic is over, but really, the coronavirus isn't. It's going to stay with us for a while, and we might have lockdowns in the future again, either because of this virus or another virus. I think most people would try to get into a single family home or at least, you know, land oriented development rather than a condo, if at all possible.
Great advice. Andre, I'm just thinking we've taken up a lot of your time, and I know you have an appointment in the next few minutes here, but we do have that segment called the Five Wire, five lighthearted questions to end the show. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Sure.
The Five Wire is brought to you by Scalina Real Estate.
Hey, that sounds familiar.
Scalina Real Estate is a full-service real estate company serving Vancouver, offering comprehensive, tried and tested buyer and seller systems.
With over a decade in the top 10% of realtors in the Lower Mainland and a perfect 5-star Google review, Scalina Real Estate can help with all your real estate needs.
We also have an extensive network of the best industry professionals and trades right across the country.
There's no reason to not get in touch. Head over to scalinarealestate.com to find out more.
Question number one, what are you listening to these days, music-wise?
Oh, music-wise. Well, you know what? I got a free Amazon Music thingy on a service, and somehow it has figured out how old I am and what was the music from my teenage years. So it selects music from my teenage years, which I love, but no one else in the household wants to listen to it, so I'm not going to even mention it. But I kind of turned on some sort of auto select something and that is selecting rock and roll stuff from like the 70s, 80s, 90s, you know, AC/DC, Metallica, Scorpions, that kind of thing that I know no one else listens to, but I still love it. And it's so great to hear some that I have known for many years. And especially if it's remastered, it's a real treat.
This is something you've been binge watching or a great movie you've seen lately.
Well, you know, I watched, it's an old movie now, but I watched The Martian recently with my kids. Because, I kind of want to get them into the idea that by thinking through things and using science, you can solve problems. Now, I don't really know if that's useful advice anymore these days, but I still think it is. So there you go. Great movie with really very few actors when you think about it, but excellent actors. And but the main lesson there is, you use science and thinking and persistency, and then eventually you get the return. The Martian is about an astronaut who gets stranded on Mars, but eventually he does make it back. And I think that lesson was great and very enjoyable movie.
And that's Matt Damon, I think.
Yes. Right? It sounds like science fiction. It is a science fiction movie, but there's really very little about it that's science fiction. It's all about determination and really using science to solve problems.
I'm going to have to watch that. One book, Andre, that you'd recommend our listeners pick up?
Well, you know what? I have, other than the security analysis and derivatives valuation books that are lying on my desk, I have really quite enjoyed Jordan Peterson's second book, and the title escapes me for the moment, but if you're not familiar with him, he's a psychology prophet at U of T. But so he has this first book, 12 Rules of Life, which it is what it is. In my view, that was a little bit kind of one-sided. In the second book, which recently came out, I think it's a lot more nuanced and sort of he highlights many, many contradictions in there. And I like that. I like to see when ideas evolve and change and I put to some sort of test and questioning. So I quite enjoyed that.
Okay, great. One belief, practice, or habit that you've adopted over the last 3 to 5 years that's improved your life?
Peloton? Is that
yeah, that's a good one.
Yes, for sure. Except you know, I'm very cheap. So I did not buy the machine. I bought the online subscription. So the joke my wife says is she's a Peloton wife, but didn't even get the machine. You know, like the worst of all worlds. But more seriously, during the pandemic, it became very clear to me that working out even a little bit every day is hugely important. So that's kind of my religion practice. You know, I really try to do something even a little bit every day. I think that's hugely important.
Fantastic. I'm trying to think right now of an instructor that has Scorpions songs playing in the background. Most of them are hip hop, but anyways.
Yes, you don't want to drift off into teenage memories during your workout either. I'm not
right.
Sure. That should not work for me. Speak to hip hop for the workout. That's totally fine.
And last but not least, something under $1,500 you've purchased recently that had a positive impact on your life,
apart from that subscription, I guess.
Oh my goodness! I did for my birthday. I requested the Lego Mindstorms robot. Now that tells you what nerd I am, because you know here I am, you know, trying to solve all the world's problem, and the one thing I can think of is the Lego robot. But you know, I love it. Just the ability to within 5-10 minutes to create something that the robot can sense distance and color and that kind of stuff. And the fact is, it's expensive, but to buy that kind of technology, even like 3 or 4 years ago, would have been unthinkable. That would have been thousands of dollars worth of machinery. And now it's a Lego robot that, you know, I mean, it's, as I said, it's expensive, but at the end of, not prohibitively so, at the end of the day, that evolution of technology is phenomenal, and I'm loving it. I'm spending every day some time on it and loving it.
That's it sounds like your kids are getting a good STEM education for sure with some of your interests. Hopefully they get some 80s metal in there just to round things out. But
we
appreciate your time today, Andre. And how can people find out more about what you're up to?
Well, I do have a website, but I think the easiest is to maybe follow me on Twitter. I try to tweet about once a day or once every 2 days. So I think I'm pretty easy to find on Twitter. I think it's Andre D. Pavlov or something like that. And, so I tweet articles or retweet mostly what other people have tweeted, the things that are appealing to me. And then in terms of research, I have a paper on the impact of immigration on real estate prices. That's with Sur Somerville. That's just coming out. But a new paper, and then another recent paper again with Sur Somerville and Tom Davidoff on the impact of laneway homes on nearby properties,
right?
And in general, the impact of densification on nearby properties, and of course now we're working on another paper in that same area. So yeah, lots of research papers. The problem is they take so long to actually get through the peer review process. By the time they eventually come out, you know, it's been years since we start, so it's hard to be persistent there. But yeah, so I have those three papers. One is published, one in the works, and one brand new we're working on.
Is the immigration one, is that one accessible for people, or is that something like
is it actually published at this point, or
it has not been peer reviewed. It's a working paper. We're just starting the peer review process, but yes, that is available. I think it's publicly available because we submitted it to a conference. Now, I can't tell you the link right now off the top of my head, but obviously something I'm happy to share. It is public now. And that paper is uses data from foreign buyer tax in 2016 and clearly shows that expensive homes, especially single-family homes, did experience a price decline following the introduction of the tax, but nobody else did. So condos experienced no impact at all. And also single family homes in other areas, lower price single family homes also had no impact. So, maybe that sounds quite obvious to you, but we document that very, very carefully. And the results are really very, very conclusive.
Interesting. Huh. Maybe we'll have to have you back on, Andre. I know you have an appointment here in a couple minutes, but that's a topic that would be really exciting to talk more about.
Yeah, sure.
Absolutely. Well, Andre, thanks so much for your time today. And always a pleasure having you on the program.
All right. Good to talk to you.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with past guest fan favorite, Professor Andre Pavlov over at the Beattie School of Business at Simon Fraser University.
I loved that conversation with Andre. It's always great having him on the show and can't wait to get him back in Kokomo Studios, Matt. But before we actually had this episode recorded with Andre, I was telling you about how my daughter, she's almost three, she's been so excited about Encanto and she wants to watch it all the time. And then in the car, we've been just playing it over like the same three songs, like that Surface Pressure song is... I've listened to it like 300 times.
We don't talk about Bruno.
Yeah, that one. That's a big one. Anyway, she can like sit. She's like dancing in her car seat and she's super excited about it. I can't get these songs out of my head. And it's like almost to the point where it's driving me like really insane. This conversation with Andre, woke up this morning whistling Winds of Change.
Winds of Change.
Yeah, exactly. I'm on a Scorpions kick.
You know what? That's useful, right? Because another thing we were talking about in the office yesterday that I woke up with in my head this morning that wasn't Winds of Change was the Jive Bunny soundtrack.
Oh,
from I think the mid-90s.
I had that on last night.
Oh, my.
That's a crazy thing that there was this band, and I think this must have been the origin, but at some point, Jive Bunny and the Master Mixers, like they were just like, we're going to create these awesome parties with this old time
like
music
old
remix.
Boomers. Yeah.
For old, yeah. And it is
specifically old boomers because it's like all kind of 50s music, right?
Yeah.
Like, come on, baby.
Yeah. It's all, yeah. There's a lot of big bopper. But the crazy thing about that is when we were listening to it yesterday too, that would be a garbage party.
What kind of party would that be, right?
Come on, everybody.
I know.
Come on, everybody.
It's like, now leave me alone. Yeah. I don't want to get up and dance.
That's a party I'm not going to.
But the other thing I was thinking of is like that came out at a time, and maybe it's the same now, but music was expensive to buy. Like, what were the royalties that they were paying for that mix?
Interesting.
Like,
yeah.
I have no idea, but it's a mashup of like 50 hits.
Yeah. A lot of Elvis songs.
And it's literally... there's not a lot of DJing. It's just like kind of mixing one song into the other, but it's pretty, they stay pretty true to the originals.
I'd like to see like how much did they make Jive Bunny from just taking
and
good
how much
songs
did Elvis make? Yeah.
But you know what? The last thing I'll say about Jive Bunny and the Master Mixers, this is a conversation I could have for hours. I was, I played it for again, Ivy, my daughter, she loved it. And when I turned it off, she immediately wanted it back on.
Yeah.
I was like, holy, this is, I thought I'd never listen to it
again.
I
was going to say you thought Encanto was bad.
Yeah. No, I know. Now we got a new hit in the house. Anyways, Matt, before we cut for the day, what do we got?
What do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for all things real estate related. We have the Vancouver Commercial Real Estate Podcast
with
Corey Wright. Great episode this week about scaling and how to scale in commercial real estate, which is worth a listen for sure. We have the Livewire. This is our weekly mailer where we have stats before anyone else. We got VIP access to pre-sales, residential and commercial. We got deal of the month. There's no reason you don't want to be on the Livewire. We also have private client services.
Because Matt, if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You got sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips. Just sign up over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And you know what? PCS is great in any market, in a rising market. It's great to see where the prices are going and in a potentially shifting market.
Totally.
This is, if you want to know exactly what's going week, not even day by day in the market, PCS is the easiest way to do so. So that's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And I think that's it.
Yeah, now I got some crappy music in my head.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks to us. So do you, the listener. Appreciate it. We'll be back next week. We've got another amazing show. Can't wait. And man, this is shaping up to be a great year for podcasting.
That is absolutely the case. If you want to talk about that or anything else, 778-847-2854 or matt@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
And we also got that Kokomo line, info@vancouverrealestatepodcast.com.
Well, have a great week, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Happy Easter.
Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.